Yes, the same kind of story seems to come down from long ago. Two friends having coffee together, or something flies by their window. It might be out on that lawn, which is wide at least half of the playing field.
And welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. I'm George North. Last week we heard of a very tragic, brutal murder of Dr. Eugene Maloff, a regular on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Maloff, of course, was behind the investigation of cold fusion, an alternative energy source. Tonight, in memory of Dr. Maloff, we offer this past program, an interview done with him in February of this year. I'm looking forward to tonight. My guest, Dr. Eugene Maloff. He heads up a nonprofit organization called New Energy Foundation. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But more importantly, we're also going to be talking about several different kinds of possibly alternative energy systems. Cold fusion, of course, which has to do with hydrogen. Then there's called vacuum energy, which is zero-point energy. And then there's environmental energy, energy from really sensible thermal energy that you would be able to find. And there's some incredible stories, too. There was an individual named Joseph Popp, for example. He invented the noble gas engine. Whatever happened to that? It had no exhaust. It blew up one day, killing one person. We'll talk about that too. All of that and much more on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Eugene Maloff is the president of the nonprofit New Energy Foundation, and he has held the position of editor-in-chief of Infinite Energy magazine since 1995. Dr. Maloff holds a Master of Science degree and a Bachelor of Science degree in Aeronautical and Astronautical Engineering from MIT, and a science doctorate in environmental health sciences from Harvard University. Dr. Maloff has experience in high technology engineering companies, including Hughes Research Laboratories, the Analytic Science Corporation, and MIT Lincoln Laboratory. Since 1991, he has worked as a consultant to corporations and investment firms doing and planning R&D in new energy. He has taught science journalism at MIT and at Boston University, and he was chief science writer at the MIT News Office when cold fusion erupted. And prior to that, he was a top science writer and broadcaster with the Voice of America in Washington, D.C. He's also the author of three science books and has written several science and technology articles for magazines and newspapers. Knows what he's talking about. Dr. Maloff, welcome to Coast. How are you?
Absolutely delighted to be on your program, George, and I'm fine here in New Hampshire, 2 a.m., of course, a little after.
It was interesting tonight where John Kerry, in one of his acceptance speeches in the five states that he took tonight, said that cars should be built in Detroit, but we shouldn't be taking oil from the Middle East anymore. It sure would be better if we just develop a different form of fuel, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Except the great problem with the statements that many of the candidates have been making are that they refer only to what you might call conventional alternative energies, such as solar power, wind power, and the so-called hydrogen power that they talk about. Hydrogen power, in the conventional sense, is only an energy storage mechanism. It is not an energy source per se, unless you get the hydrogen from fossil fuels, which some of the fuel cell people are talking about. In order to make hydrogen from water by conventional means, you need much greater energy from some other source like nuclear power, standard nuclear power, or solar power, or something else. So a lot of what one hears the candidates in this presidential quest talking about may sound good and green, so to speak, but it is actually not very productive at all.
And to those who aren't in the know or study or read or even listen to programs like this or words that you speak, they will hear this rhetoric and they'll go, oh, this is great. Yep. You know, I'm all behind this person.
That's right, indeed. In fact, I can tell you of a very interesting experience we had recently. I, almost as a hobby, because I don't really expect much from presidential candidates of any party or of any stripe. We are not nonprofit New Energy Foundation, of course, has to be nonpartisan. I do have my own political views, but they're not important. But I do go out from time to time, and I look at the presidential candidates, because in New Hampshire, that's very easy to do. You just turn around, and there's another one standing there. But basically, I go to various events and try to raise the question of really new energy, what we're talking about, the kind of things that you introduced, cold fusion, which is better called low-energy nuclear reactions now, vacuum energy or ether energy, and even a profound environmental energy, sort of violations or extensions of the second law of thermodynamics, things that will lead to truly remarkable infinite energy sources that do not rely on the normal limitations of windmills and conventional solar power. So I recently asked, there were three candidates at a forum, and this was on January 9th in Concord, and I had posed a question, which the moderator so kindly asked the candidates. He basically said this, would you support an office within the United States Department of Energy to evaluate what might be called unconventional energy sources, not merely renewable sources such as wind power, but such things as cold fusion, so-called zero-point or vacuum energy? 30 seconds, okay? And we have three candidates. There are only three at this particular forum. And they gave their answers, and each one had a positive response. Of course, they didn't really know what we were talking about.
They're hoping they're answering it the right way.
Right. may I quote what Edward said?
You may, sure.
Because it shows that even though the spirit is there, the knowledge isn't. And if we could only get the knowledge in, and perhaps by a program such as we're having now, listeners out there visiting other primaries will actively introduce the same kind of question into the arena, and we'll actually get these guys to talk about it. Here's what Edward said. Before I answer that question, I want these two, and he turned to Lieberman and Kucinich, tell me what the definition of cold fusion to zero point is. And then the audience laughed. Yeah, I got a feeling, listening to those answers, the two previous ones, that they don't have any idea of what it is. Then Kucinich got up and whispered something to Edwards, and then Edwards continued. Yes, of course. And the answer is yes. I would support an office that worked on alternative sources of energy. That's the answer to the question. And there we have it.
And there it was.
Right.
Nice and vague and marshmallowy.
Right. Well, yeah. Hey, listen, Clinton in that very same room, Bill Clinton, before he was nominated, long before he was nominated, this was January 1992, in that very same room in Concord, New Hampshire, had given a much more precise answer to my then almost exclusive focus on the cold fusion matter, and he actually kind of knew what it was, and he knew that the Department of Energy was stonewalling even his scientists in Arkansas. So he knew what was going on and still did nothing.
I'll tell you what, Doctor, in one of the big problems, as we all know, which eventually this nation is going to have to recognize, is the tremendous power and clout of oil companies in this country that control destiny. And as you well know, Eisenhower once said a long, long time ago that we need to be aware of the industrial-military complex, and, mm-hmm. and his fear always was, is those companies that benefited by war would indeed be in charge. And darn if he wasn't right.
Well, yeah, he was right in many respects, but he was a slightly off target. His rifle, he was probably a good soldier and a good marksman, but his shot in that particular speech was slightly off in that what we really have today, I would say, not so much the oil companies opposing this. In fact, they're not really. As far as they're concerned, it's dead. But actually, academic and government complex. The academic government complex is what did in, so to speak, the proper evaluation and continued research into the initial announcement of cold fusion back on March 23rd, 1989.
But is there an anti-coal fusion lobby that might be funded by big oil companies?
No, not at all.
Okay.
There's an anti-coal fusion lobby that is funded regularly by Uncle Sam. And I don't want to make too much of this. Some of my subscribers have advised me on this program going on before to accentuate the positive, and I will accentuate the positive and tell.
Well,
many,
no, don't you hold back.
I want to tell
with
you
me for 3 hours tonight.
But we need but we do need some background here, because after all, I myself was a very conventional, mainstream, so to speak, thinker in science prior to March 23rd, 1989, and even for a year after March 23rd, 1989, when I was trying to determine for myself the truth or falsity of the claims from Drs. Pons and Fleischmann and their people who replicated or were claiming to replicate their results, I just believed that the scientific establishment was pretty much on the up and up, and that they would, of course, address a new claim with justice and with curiosity.
Sure, their ears would be perked.
Oh, absolutely. Their ears, and they would have a new field. They always claim to be interested in new frontiers. But I found, to my great dismay, increasingly, that they were not interested in new things, really. They were interested primarily in getting rid of a new idea that quite radically upset their apple cart. The people that were most threatened by this and who acted in the most egregious negative way were my former friends at MIT in the hot fusion program. MIT gets tens of millions of dollars every year to research how to make multi-million degree, 200 million degree Kelvin temperatures to create the kind of fusion that they believe is going on in the core of the sun, and to create helium. And that would indeed be an infinite supply of energy from water, because the fuels are in water.
Sure.
But they haven't succeeded, and they've spent, in the United States alone, an estimated $20 billion since the early 1950s.
And they're still going at it?
Still going at it, and when Pons and Fleischmann came out with that astounding announcement 12 hours before the Exxon Valdez ran aground, most ironically, they were shocked. Now, they didn't believe it, and they immediately assembled all reasons to doubt it, first from a theoretical point of view, and then they began to bring up all kinds of bogus, and in some cases, quite bluntly, fraudulent reasons against Pons and Fleischmann for throwing the whole thing into the trash can. The U.S. Department of Energy made a rush to judgment. Within 6 months, they had a negative report, and that stamp of disapproval has lasted since then.
Well, when this started, and what year was that for Fleischmann?
1989,
all right.
March 23rd, 1989, in the afternoon in Salt Lake City, this astounding announcement came from two world-class chemists.
Whatever happened to them?
Well,
they still alive?
Absolutely. Dr. Fleischmann, in particular, a fellow of the Royal Society, one of the world's most famous electrochemists, a brilliant man, and it was his driving force that brought the idea initially to the fore. Though he worked with Dr. Stanley Pons, then an American, who was the head of the chemistry department at the University of Utah. They're both alive. Dr. Fleischmann, as I said, attends regularly all the international meetings. He participates in the Italian program. There's a small official Italian program in this area, just, you know, several million dollars a year, and it's kind of mislabeled. It's not given the cold fusion or low energy nuclear reactions name, but it's there nonetheless. And Stanley Pons, I regret to say, changed his citizenship, but I do understand his feelings. Early in the 90s, he was sick and tired of being called a fraud. So he moved to France with Dr. Fleischmann and worked under Japanese auspices, Toyota, Minoru Toyota, the late one of the
founders
of Toyota,
right.
Funded them in a laboratory in the south of France, in Nice, for many years. And they had great success, and their work was even published in peer-reviewed journal, Physics Letters A, in 1993, and still that had no effect. The science, getting back to our original issue here, the academic government complex, not the military-industrial complex as much as the academic government complex, is against new scientific ideas that threaten the foundations of their work, and they, no matter how many papers are published, I don't care whether they're on the internet or not on the internet or what they, where they are, the establishment academic government complex is brain dead.
I mean, why can't they open their arms and say, this is exciting, let's try it, let's experiment, and let's jump in it?
It's remarkable. I must tell you, George, 15 years, almost 15 years now, after that fateful day of March 23rd, 1989, I continue to evolve in my understanding of the emotional and psychological and intellectual armoring, to borrow a term from the famous Wilhelm Reich, that scientists have. It's astounding. One physicist at MIT, whose name is Dr. Hermann Feschbach, one of the world's foremost nuclear physics people, now he's deceased, but at MIT, as I was finishing up my time there as a senior person in the MIT news office as a science journalist, he had played a role in getting rid of a major article that was going to appear in the MIT magazine, a very influential magazine called Technology Review. It's on newsstands all over the place. He said to me, I've had 50 years of experience in nuclear physics, and I know what's possible and what's not possible. And then that was it. That was his total statement, which I would cite forever as a statement, a kind of statement that should never come out of the mouth of any person who considers themselves a legitimate scientist. They're not a scientist if they say, based on previous knowledge and theory that I have, I know for all time what is possible and what's not. That's obviously crazy.
I know you had just mentioned, by the way, Dr. Wilhelm Reich, who's now deceased as well.
Absolutely.
And didn't he come up with a theory of what he called orgone?
Absolutely, orgone, right.
And they put him in jail over this, right?
Yes, it's a complicated story as to how he arrived in prison. He lived, by the way, for those who don't really know much about Reich and who may think Reich was a completely deluded person. I didn't know much about him myself, quite frankly, until about the year 2000, long after my entry into the cold fusion field. He would live between 1897 and 1957. He was a close colleague of Sigmund Freud. He was an assimilated Jewish person from Austria. He left Germany, obviously, early on, and worked in Denmark and Norway.
He was a psychiatrist first,
He was a psychiatrist. He had many ideas of sexuality, some of which today are quite commonly accepted, actually, but in many, many circles today. Maybe a modern forerunner of the, generally speaking, more sexually liberal ideas that many people today may have.
He was the early version of the Masters and Johnson.
Perhaps, you might say. how he got involved in a more physics-based and biology-based study of nature is quite one of the most amazing stories that one could ever imagine. But his work has been taken up by others, and we'll have time to talk about that.
Yeah.
But why did he get in jail? In 1957, he was put in jail for contempt of court. And this originated from his statement that he would not allow any court to be the adjudicator of a scientific issue, which in general terms I agree with.
Sure.
In other words, what the hell is a court to determine a major scientific question? Well, at that time, he and other physicians in a network were studying the effects of so-called orgone accumulators, these little chambers that one could get into of a special design, and he was determining the physiological effect on various maladies, was not selling it as a cancer cure, but some left-winger went after him and called sick the FDA on him, actually.
And they put him in jail over that.
Put him in jail, and he died in prison.
And took all his equipment, and nobody ever found it again.
they did not take his equipment, actually. They burned his books. He was the only scientist in history, I believe, who had his books burned in Nazi Germany, Soviet Union, and the United States. There was a court order, believe it or not, in the United States. It's hard to conceive of this, but there was, to burn and get rid of certain books that he had written with the word orgone in it.
All right, we'll come right back because I want to really talk with you now about these other alternative forms of energy that you're talking about, Eugene, and just see how close we are to implementing some of this or if we ever will be. And also, I'm going to ask you about peaking oil because that's something that has kind of piqued my interest, and I want you to see if you can explain to us what that means, peaking oil. Back in a moment.
Can't believe what you're hearing? Listen to it again when you sign up for Streamlink at www.coasttocoastam.com. It's only 15 cents a day. Of Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. From the City of Angels, Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And our guest tonight, Dr. Eugene Mallov, we're going to be talking about Fire from Ice, one of his books, Searching for the Truth Behind the Cold Fusion Furor, and of course some other forms of alternative energy. Zero point energy has always been very interesting to me. We have covered some of these stories in the After Dark newsletter. If you want to pick that up, call 1-888-727-5505. Go to coasttocoastam.com. You get a free CD, one of Art Bell's earlier interviews with the late Father Malachi Martin on exorcisms. Well, hello, this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Eugene Mallov tonight, my guest. Doctor, I guess for us to really get going into this, I want you to tell us a little bit about the New Energy Foundation, what it is, when it was formed, and why.
Well, we've been publishing Infinite Energy magazine for a number of years now, anyway, since 1995, and we're going into our 10th year soon. But in the year 2002, we decided that a better basis for it, rather than having it nonprofit and have it owned by a company that was titled Cold Fusion Technology, it would be much better to have it nonprofit, as it is now, 501c3, so charitable contributions will have their effect. And we are doing two things, continuing. We are continuing, of course, to publish Infinite Energy magazine, which goes to some 40-plus countries, actually, recipients thereof. We have rather small print runs, but still it's very influential. Many thousands of people see it and buy it. But at the same time, we wanted to raise money so that we could give money away in the form of research grants to inventors and scientists who are doing critically needed research, because certainly the government is not directly funding this. At least the United States government is not, certainly the Department of Energy is not funding it. There have been some military quasi-surreptitious givings of money for the low-energy nuclear reactions area, but there's really nothing being spent by the government. So we at New Energy Foundation get a pool of money, are in the process of trying to assemble that so that in the initial stages we could hopefully reach something on the order of $500,000 a year to be given away, awarded to specific recipients who merit this. Now, we get all manner of inquiries, I hasten to say,
sure,
particularly since we're on the air here, of all manner of people who think they have some over-unity device, something
yes
that produces more energy out than in. And we always take a very objective look at it, providing that they, under non-disclosure or with no non-disclosure, bring it to our attention and show the measurements, show us the measurements or let us measure it, and then find out whether their ideas are worthwhile.
Because there could be another Joseph Pop out there somewhere, right? And we'll talk about him later.
Absolutely. We never throw anything out, no matter how crazy it sounds on first blush, unless the person is obviously disturbed, okay, or purely driven by blather and emotionality. We want to see data, results. We can sometimes agree to a situation where we get a black box, as it were, where we are not allowed to look inside, but we can evaluate its performance, the input and the output, the weighing of it, and making sure that some truly incredible performance is occurring. That rarely happens, by the way, because most inventors, a lot of inventors, either will not share with us their
proprietary
their work. They won't even let us test it. In which case, forget it.
Yeah, exactly, it's got to be tested.
We have burnt. We have wasted a lot of time with people who just, you know, we're on very thin ice to begin with. Okay,
mm-hmm.
quite damaging. And now, after many years of the School of Hard Knocks, we know what's real when we see it and test it, and what's not real.
Have you had some intriguing people come in?
We've had very intriguing people come in. We've had one especially intriguing person who came in, who to this day is probably doing some good work. We understand. We follow their trail, as it were.
Yeah.
But I have to say, with respect to this Mr. X, let's call this particular, actually I don't want to call him Mr. X to confuse people, but a certain party, a nice scientific man who had certain ether vacuum energy kind of ideas.
He's an American, right?
American, yes,
okay.
Doing a lot of experiments. And to this day, I have not been presented with the kind of material and information necessary to evaluate his work. But if he calls me on the phone or his associates call me on the phone, I always talk with them and I ask them about the latest status of the work. I mean, that's a clear case where the guy might well have something and is worth pursuing because we know he's scientifically based, but show us the evidence.
Yeah, doesn't that make you suspect when they don't do that?
It gives me some pause, yes, indeed. And so, for example, I could never state to anybody today that this particular person, let's call him Mr. G to distinguish, Mr. G has not shown us the measurements and the devices that we need to see. But perhaps someday he will break down and show it to us. He's very friendly to us, so I don't have a problem. On the other hand, we have people, excellent people, who have allowed me to come into their laboratory, measure their machines, and observe what they're doing, and read their theories, and see in intimate detail, almost as detailed as I could possibly wish, so that I can confidently assert that they indeed have vacuum energy technology. There are people like that.
I've got a pill that you can drop in the water. It turns it into fuel, but I'm not going to show you how it works.
Right. No, we're not talking about people like that. We wouldn't talk. We would certainly go to such a demonstration if a person had such a pill, but we would not spend too much time if we were not allowed to test it independently.
So as you proceed, as you kind of wean out these people,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Why isn't our government saying, this is critical, we need to do this? Or are they doing it somewhere, doctor, in a laboratory at Area 51?
Yeah.
Nobody knows what they're doing.
Well, let's start. Let's put that second question aside, whether the government sort of has it under its arm in the first place. That's an interesting question. I doubt it, quite frankly, but I'm open to the possibility that they have. Let's just talk about, to start with, the first thing that got my interest, of course, which was cold fusion.
And explain what that is.
Well, Drs. Pons and Fleischmann made the claim in 1989, and they published a scientific paper in the Journal of Electroanalytical Chemistry pretty quickly thereafter, after the press conference, they said, look, we're passing an electric current into an electrochemical cell which has palladium for one of its electrodes and platinum for another electrode. And this heavy water, which is obtainable from all water, it's not radioactive, it's normal stuff that you can get from the ocean or from snow or streams. Small percentage of water is heavy water. It's got the heavy hydrogen isotope, basically, D2O, not H2O. And what we see is more energy out than in. In other words, more heat energy is coming out than electrical energy is going in. Now, when you do an experiment like that with a heat-measuring calorimeter, you have to be very careful because there are some bookkeeping errors of the production of hydrogen and oxygen that you can fool yourself with. So that was indeed a fair initial question. Are they doing the bookkeeping correctly? And they were world-class electrochemists. They knew about those bookkeeping possible errors, but they had obviously checked that out very carefully before they made their announcement. And they found that the amount of heat coming out, even though it was relatively speaking a small excess percentage, but when it persisted over many, many days, weeks, and months even, that you add it up and it basically told them there's some kind of energy source in here. We don't know exactly what it is, but it's not standard chemistry. It mm-hmm. looks to us like a nuclear source, and they had some other evidence, radioactive tritium that was produced, and some what they believe to be neutron emissions, that they correlated to some extent, not in the conventional fusion reaction, but some new kind of fusion reaction. So it's a complicated story, but in essence, they announced that they had created a nuclear kind of probable fusion type reaction in a jar of water. This was guaranteed to create instant controversy.
Without the danger of radiation, let's say?
Correct. Okay. That is correct. In fact, the establishment brought forth the argument against them, an absurd argument, but this is what it amounts to. They said, since we, great nuclear physicists and hot fusion people, understand everything there is to know about fusion, and we can tell you that the only way you could possibly be getting the heat that you say you're getting would be to have a corresponding amount of deadly radiation. Since you're alive, your results, your measurements, must be wrong. In other words, they did not even admit the possibility that Drs. Fleischmann and Pons might have discovered or stumbled across an entirely new way of doing nuclear reactions.
They shot it down right
away. They shot it down almost on day one, sharpened the knives, and did a media campaign against it, and succeeded in branding it as pathological science, fraud, scientific schlock. All these kind of words were used. But the bottom line is this. The proof now for the reality of a class of low-energy nuclear reactions is completely overwhelming. There are some 3,000 papers published. They're not all as high quality as a smaller subset of those papers. But of those papers that are really good, and there are hundreds that are, the evidence is stupendous. It would any reasonable scientist taking an objective look at this monumental gathering of information, which we can discuss a little more, would say, yes, there's a whole class of low-energy nuclear reactions that absolutely must be investigated, and we should certainly either put on low burner or terminate the infamous hot fusion program save some money.
Who is beating us at this game outside of this country? Other nations?
I'll tell you the nation that is the two nations that are most likely to succeed in this. Okay, Japan and China. Okay, actually, I bet more heavily on China at this point.
Which is unfortunate, but
it is unfortunate that the United States, where this was first discovered, is going to be taken to the cleaners, so to speak, by another country that has much more open-minded scientists. For example, the 9th International Conference on Cold Fusion was held in Beijing, and I went to it in May of 2002, and it was a completely open-minded meeting at Tsinghua University in Beijing. Scientists from around the world came, from Italy, Russia, France, Israel. Now, Israel, by the way, is a player in this. A very good, strong private company within Israel is doing this work. I'm very happy to say that. But China had its physics societies formally sponsoring this meeting. And there's no blood in the streets in China as far as the issue of coal fusion. They don't kill each other over it. Whereas in the United States, I mean, figuratively speaking, kill each
sure.
other.
Sure. Well, you never know in China.
Yeah, right. Well, it's true with Tiananmen Square and what have you. But the point is, there's an open-mindedness to new technological and scientific ideas, and the Chinese people obviously are very smart. They produce very high-quality products. And when they see an opportunity here, there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that when this technology reaches a critical stage, and it may well do that in the coming years, it's still having trouble making very reliable, robust systems, but it is absolutely real nonetheless. When they find a way to make it robust and real, they'll take off like a rocket with this.
Now, what are the applications for cold fusion in practically for all of us if this thing gets
essentially
out?
Essentially, anything. Any area of energy technology that can be imagined could, in theory, be replaced by cold fusion.
You could heat your houses. You could run your cars.
Houses, electricity. Rocket propulsion, many things. Here's the bottom line. In a gallon of water, this is an approximation because my viewpoint on this is that the coal fusion theorists, even the mainline coal fusion theorists, don't really understand the process very well at all. In fact, I think they're going, in, generally speaking, in the wrong direction. They're doing good work on experiments, but the theoretical foundations that they're doing have some serious problems and it is causing the field to be retarded. But 1 gallon of water has in it 1/6700th of that water has molecules that contain the heavy hydrogen isotope called deuterium.
Okay.
It's hydrogen with one extra neutron in its nucleus.
All right.
And when you fuse 2 deuterium nuclei together to make helium, I'm not saying that's how it happens at the surface of palladium, but when that happens, you do get a certain amount of energy release that in the case of this type of reaction doesn't produce deadly gamma rays, but produces instead heat. All right? The amount of heat in 1 gallon of water, I'm talking ordinary water now
sure.
from the ocean. I want to be real clear to your listeners.
Just scoop
not
it right
water,
up. Okay.
Just the ordinary water from the ocean, the lake, the brook, the snow, anywhere from your local
grocery
store.
Okay.
Okay. 300 gallons of gasoline equivalent.
My, oh my. And it's...
Keep that
it's,
in mind. That number, if any listener today,
300
your program, remembers anything of what I'm saying, please remember that one number, that in the United States, a discovery that was made that was announced in 1989, ridden out of town with ridicule, so to speak, by the U.S. Department of Energy and its idiotic academic... slaves, as it were.
Well, 2 gallons of water might last you an entire year if you drive 18,000 miles, for example.
Oh, of course.
If you're getting 30 miles to a gallon.
No. Right. Energy would be free. Energy would be free for all practical purposes.
Ah, but that's why it's not out there, Eugene.
Well, of course, they will have to tax it. And even if we had coal fusion devices tomorrow, I assure you that the government would find some way of taxing it because they would have to find some way of continuing the support, of course, to keep up the interstate highway system.
I would still pay the same money I'm paying for gasoline, which I think is outrageous.
Uh-huh.
I would still pay that for this kind of fuel.
Of course, because it would be clean.
Yep.
There would be no emissions of either particles of soot or nitrogen oxides.
And you wouldn't be dependent on anyone.
That's correct. Saudi Arabia, Kuwait...
Iraq, any of them.
They could kiss our sweet you-know-what. We could say goodbye, folks. In fact, the thing that outrages me the most about this is that we could have, many years ago, even when the days when Saddam was in power, okay, and a horrible dictator and a complete megalomaniac he was, and I'm glad he's gone, okay? But the point of the matter is we could have, the United States government could have begun to quietly tell Saudi Arabia, Iraq, all these countries that have us by the soft spots, in a few more years, not too many more, we will have this problem solved and we're not going to be dependent on you at all. And that goes for you, too, companies in the United States
mm-hmm.
that think that we're going to be eternally beholden to oil interests. We're not. We will eat oil for food.
We'll use it for plastics, right?
Make it for plastics, but we're not going to use it for combustion, which is an absurd use, particularly in an age when we have discoveries like coal fusion, and I haven't even discussed vacuum energy yet.
That's when we come back.
We'll talk about those too. But here, the thing about coal fusion that's wonderful, low energy nuclear reactions, LENR, and apart from our website, infinite-energy.com, which will refer people to all websites with new types of energy, the primary website that deals with LENR is called LENR-CANR.org. And if you go to that website, you'll have numerous PDF file technical reports, original reports, just like on our website, but they have a primary focus on coal fusion, LENR. The technical papers that scientists and engineers can eat up and see for themselves the reality of this emerging field. And that's the paradigm. One case, okay, of new energy, radically new energy, as we call it, unconventional energy, not standard alternative energy, that's the one case that is overwhelmingly documented across a huge variety of publications, countries, and what have you. And it's a disgrace, an absolute disgrace, that in our country, the U.S. Department of Energy will not relook at the original disaster that they perpetrated with their negative report.
Okay, let's talk when we come back, Dr. Malov, about some of the reasons why we're not pushing in this direction, because I still think the big oil companies have their thumb on us.
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. Log on now.